Hey, dear listeners, 3CR Community Radio is hosting a 24-hour program on March the 8th, starting at 12 midnight on March the 7th and finishing at 12 midnight on March the 8th. We will have many interviews, music and more. Listen to 3CR Community Radio Station on the dial 855 AM on digital radio 3CR and streaming at 3cr.org.au to commemorate this important day, International Women's Day, with us.
You're listening to 3CR's 24-hour broadcast for International Women's Day. You're with Hannah and Marion's segment on women in conservation. We're going to hear from Maya Burrell, a young woman who is working and volunteering in conservation.
We'll then hear from Alana Mountain, who also works for Friends of the Earth and volunteers in land conservation.
Then we're going to finish up the show by hearing presentations from three First Nations women, Dr. Mandy Nicholson, MP Sheena Watt, and Tegan Shields, at the Celebrating Women in Conservation Breakfast 2025. Stay tuned. You're here with me and Marion.
Hi. Hello. Hey, Maya.
We're doing a show about women in conservation. Do you want to tell me a bit about the wildlife rescue and care that you do?
Yeah, sure. That sounds great. Do you want me to go now?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, well, I volunteer at St. Andrew's Wildlife Shelter, which is like out Nillumbik Way. I normally am there on a weekly basis, but I've been having a few weeks off. And it just sort of like entails, yeah, just going there for the morning and feeding all the animals and cleaning up their enclosures and making sure everybody's got medication if they need it and special feeding for the babies. And mostly it's just like possums, like brush tails and ring tails, and kangaroos, wombats, some birds, like normally. Well, the season's sort of past now, but springtime, lots of baby 20 frog mouths we get in. They're so cute.
Cute.
We'll have like 30 of them in care, just all fluffy and adorable. And we've been going to other birds now too, which is cool.
Yeah.
That's the shelter. Also volunteer as a rescuer and transporter for Wildlife Victoria. That's more on a sporadic basis, really. Like, they just text you cases and you can just like ignore them or choose to reply like yes or no with the case number, and then you're assigned that case, and then it's your responsibility to go out there and, I don't know, deal with whatever it is. It's really pretty unpredictable.
Yeah. What are your favorite animals to look after?
Oh, favorite animals. Oh, that. Well, I can't be biased, but I feel like the wombats are pretty special.
Yeah.
We have two in care at the moment, Lexi and Zara. And, well, they took quite a while to warm up to me, I think. And so it made it, like, so much more special when they actually did and they started coming out of their home or their burrow, like, when I was in their enclosure cleaning up or feeding them, like, for so long. They did not have a burrow, but they wouldn't let me come near them or they just run away.
Cute.
They're so cute.
Do you also want to tell me about the environmental groups and the volunteering that you do?
Yeah, that'd be great to talk about. So I'm with a few. I'm with King Lake Friends of the Forest, and then Watch Wildlife for the Central Highlands. They're like my two groups that I'm most involved with. With King Lake Friends of the Forest, we have been mostly focusing on forest fire management and planned burns and trying to protect a lot of the areas around King Lake. And then with Watch, we have we do more sort of focus on logging, and we have been looking at strategic fuel banks and, yeah, a lot of stuff around that.
Yeah, do you want to talk more on fuel breaks and how they're being used as a loophole to continue deforestation?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. Mm. It's tricky in the sense that I don't think that, well, I don't know everything about everything, and I do get worried that I'll say the wrong thing, but yeah, I think that it was the case that when Vic Forests, the Victorian Government Agency for Logging was disbanded, I think the rough number off the top of my head is 24 of the 25 contractors that were doing the logging for Vic Forests then got jobs with FFMV, like Forest Fire Management Victoria. Well, that kind of is pretty self-explanatory, isn't it? When we have a lot of logging contractors just go under a different organisation, different name, but they're the same people. Yeah, so that's pretty scary. But also, yeah, it feels like with the strategic fuel breaks that I'm not really sure where the wood goes half the time. Half the time it's left in there because it's like a national park, and then they leave it for they say they leave it for community members to take as firewood. I'm not sure how much of that actually happens. And then, yeah, when it's being done in state forest, well, who knows where it goes? I'm not really sure. I can't speak on that. Mm. But, yeah, that's pretty much all I feel like I can say right now.
Yeah. How is Watch and Friends of Kinglake helping with this issue?
How are we helping? we've, particularly in Watch, we've done a lot of surveying along fuel breaks, and like the things we've found, like, you know, we've seen critically endangered leadbeater's possums and endangered greater gliders and vulnerable yellow-bellied gliders and so much more wildlife that is equally as special. And, you know, like, we've collected this data voluntarily, like we're just volunteers, and then we've submitted that data and we've told, like, every level of council and government and, you know, everybody that would be involved. And a lot of the time it doesn't really do anything. Like, either people aren't willing to listen, like, or they just don't care enough to put in the proper mitigation risks to, like, protect that wildlife. So it always falls on us to, you know, advocate for it and even find out what's there.
Yeah.
Species-wise. Yeah. I hope that answers that question.
Yeah, sure. Of course. I was about to ask actually about how citizen science is just a great way of proving that deforestation, you know, the effects of it, and having scientific data showing it really helps with the cause. What other citizen science stuff are you surveying at the moment?
Right now, I wouldn't say like at this very current moment, but in the last year or so, like for Kinglake Friends of the Forest, we have been doing surveys for Dr. Philip Zylstra. So he's a fire scientist who developed a new model. It's called the FRAME model, which is like fire research and modelling environment. And it just, I think, is a more up-to-date frame of looking at how, I'm mumbling my words, looking at like how forests will burn in a fire, and not just one forest for every forest, but, you know, every individual forest burns differently and has a unique EBC or structure, or, you know, we can't just base it off one model of Jarrah Forest in WA and say that's how every forest is going to be burnt and that's how every forest should be managed.
Mm.
So we've been doing surveys to put data into that model, particularly around King Lake, and most of the time that looks like walking along a 50-metre transect and every 5-metre point measuring every vegetation that's at that point, like that comes in line with the 5-metre point. So like the height of all the shrubs and the trees and the diameter and the length of like the start of the leaf to the end of the leaf and the moisture level, and like there's a lot that goes into it. It's quite detailed.
Yeah.
But like that's so cool. Like I didn't know anything about that before I started doing this, and I don't have any qualification in that, but I feel like I know some stuff.
Totally. You know heaps of stuff. What is your experience of being a young woman in conservation?
Oh, wow, that's a big question. I think that, yeah, it's definitely feels different to be a young woman in conservation versus if I was maybe older. It feels like, yeah, maybe I'm not taken seriously sometimes, and that's no discredit to anybody. But, yeah, I guess it can be easy to just have a look at me and be like, oh, maybe, like, what does she know, you know? I'm so young and so many people have been doing this for so long, and I definitely recognize that, but I don't think it takes away from what I've done at the same time. Most people are great. Most people just want to teach me what they know and, yeah, have me on board, and I think they're really excited to have young energy and more people coming into the space. But, at the same time, I've definitely come across a few characters, and I'd definitely say just a few, that have been less accommodating and maybe a bit more gatekeepy, or a bit more, yeah, not as excited to welcome me into the club.
Yeah, I bet. What would you like to see for the future of conservation, and how do you want more people to get involved?
I feel like, and maybe I'm just in the wrong spaces within conservation because there's so many niches that you could go into, but it feels like I'm just a bit younger than anybody else, and it feels like maybe people don't come into this space until they're a bit older, or yeah, they've maybe like done uni and then they've sort of moved around a bit and not really found a space that works for them, and then it kind of takes a few years, and it feels like, I don't know, it's not as accessible, or like it's harder to find this pathway when you're quite young.
Mm.
So I would love to see like more really young people here. Like it doesn't matter how old you are, you can get involved in some way, and I don't know, maybe more engagement in schools and unis, and I mean, not that we should all be volunteering all the time, because it's definitely, we deserve to be paid as well, but yeah, it's cool to get people out to volunteer, and it's a way of like passing on knowledge and just being able to have unfiltered conversations about this kind of thing. And yeah, I want more young people around, and that would be cool to see in the future, not just the same old five old white guys that run the space. Yeah.
Totally. I agree. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. You're doing awesome stuff.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's really cool.
Of course.
This federal election may decide the fate of native forests and the fate of billions of creatures who are dependent on the forest for habitat. their fate is in your hands. Join us at the March in March for Forests on Sunday the 23rd of March. Rally outside MP Peter Khalil's office, 466 Sydney Road, Coburg, at 10:30 a.m. Bring your family, bring your friends, bring your homemade signs and be a part of protecting this vital ecosystem. March for Forests, Sunday the 23rd of March. Head to marchforforests.org for more information. Bob Brown Foundation is a 3CR supporter.
Alana Mountain, welcome back to Community Radio 3CR. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, great. So this is our special broadcast for International Women's Day, or International Working Women's Day. And you're one of the first women I thought of to ring. Do you want to start off by telling me about where you are located right now?
Well, I'm sitting in my home in Strathbogie on Tongarong country.
Beautiful. So we're thinking about women in land conservation. Do you want to fill us in a little bit on the work you do and have done around caring for country?
Sure. So currently I work for Friends of the Earth as a forest campaign coordinator, and I also work for Landcare, facilitating a network of over 15 groups in my region. So I work with Landcare groups to deliver projects on the ground, and I also deliver projects such as grey box revegetation, which is helping to heal and regenerate country.
That's fantastic. So is it satisfying seeing all of these things happen, you know, coordinating volunteers?
Yeah, I have a long history of community organising and working with volunteers to host events and get out into the landscapes. Recently we just hosted a snow gum summit, and yeah, a lot of people were involved in the scenes to put that event together, including volunteers. And yeah, it's really rewarding when things come together and people have an opportunity to get involved in something they really care about. And yeah, it makes me really happy to facilitate those kinds of experiences for other people, as well as bring people into the campaign or connect them with others who care too.
That's fantastic. Fantastic leadership. Now we do have to go there, don't we? What are the challenges, to say that alpine landscape? What are the main challenges as you see them at the moment, or threats even?
Well, there's the existential threat of climate change and the impacts of a warming climate for alpine communities. As we know, snow gum and alpine ash are in decline. They've suffered a lot of fire, and the frequency of fire is only increasing. So it doesn't really allow for these species to regenerate and to become resilient, as they just keep getting smashed by fires. And another issue, especially up in the Alps, is the issue of this beetle, the longy-horned beetle, whose mating periods are extending because of the warmer seasons. Yeah, they're quite a hungry beetle, and they bore into the snow gums and basically cause dieback via ring barking. So that's another major issue that we're facing.
Wow. Oh, that's pretty scary. So you've told us a bit about land care and revegetation work. What are some other strategies and work that you've done that you found that is effective in protecting forests?
That's a big question,
Marianne.
Oh, sorry.
So your life. Okay. Your life. Just tell us about your life.
Tell my life story.
Yeah.
Well, for many years, I was involved with community groups who ran court cases. And for anyone who's familiar, Victoria's logging industry is no longer alive.
Woohoo!
That was shut down 2024. Which is, yeah, so exciting and something to really celebrate, because it was truly achieved by community power and people putting in countless hours on the ground to find threatened species and to put together these really amazing cases before the court to prove that the timber industry was destroying habitat and causing, you know, an impact to these species, and that the regulatory body wasn't working, et cetera, et cetera. So that was a really amazing feat, and to be a part, a small part of that community and the effort of citizen science is, yeah, something that I think I'll always remember, trampling through the bush at night, looking for these animals with other people who care just as much. It was, yeah, a really amazing thing. And I think citizen science has a really big place in, yeah, all our areas of biodiversity conservation. I don't believe that the government and their, you know, their departments such as DCAR, that they're resourced and that they have the right knowledge and tools to go out there and actually detect species, because we proved time and time again that they weren't adequately doing that.
Absolutely. So look, love your work, and congratulations to you and the crew, to Watch and Kinglake Friends of the Forest, and a lot of the unaffiliated people that have done that important protection work. So what would your ideal be, looking at the near future? What would you ideally like to see in terms of forest conservation?
Another very big question. Look, I would really love to see the current government pull their finger out and immediately protect some high conservation value areas of forests. I don't care if it's a national park necessarily, but what I care about is it having a high conservation status. And I also want to see traditional owners empowered in decision making and resourced to actually be a part of managing the land. I think we have a really big opportunity to rethink how we manage forests. And something that I've been contemplating lately is the issue around state forests and national parks and reserves, and just how different the management are between those two different tenures. And really, our state forests need to be elevated, and the conservation status needs to be elevated. So I would really like to see a lot of reform in this space, and I'd like to see, land managers empowered and fully resourced to actually be able to adequately manage these landscapes. And that includes massive restoration work, obviously. Like, we know that Victoria's forests have been so overlogged and degraded, and they are at risk of fire. And there's a lot of critters in those forests, such as leadbeater's possum, that are on the brink of extinction. And we really need to see decision makers begin to take these kinds of threats seriously. Otherwise, we're going to see a massive collapse of Victoria's forests, as well as other states in Australia, if they don't be bold and do something to change the situation.
Fantastic, Alana. So that sounds like a complete win-win to me, with Indigenous people particularly having, empowerment and having meaningful work to do in land protection on their own land, and protecting it for all of us, you know, and for the climate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's also a place for all these, you know, citizen scientists and conservationists and land care groups, and for everybody, for DCAR, for the catchment management authorities. Like, it's actually a time for collaboration and for all of these people to be coming together and having a seat at the table and putting forward their best knowledge so that we can all work together to solve this. Like, it shouldn't all be on one person or, you know, the government or this or that. Like, it should be a collaborative approach at this point, and that for me would be a win-win.
Fantastic. So that's a fantastic vision. Now, I'm such a nitty-gritty. I'm also going to nitty-gritty it to be thinking. So in one of the addresses that we're going to be playing on this International Women's Day program, one of the Indigenous speakers referred to needing more diversity in approaches to land protection that fire isn't the only tool that should be available. So you talked about having skilled staff who belong there and have secure jobs in land protection as well as roles for volunteers and visitors. Do you see an argument for, say, water being more accessible in the landscape, you know, water storage so that there could be responses and we don't have these, you know, weeks-long fires as we've had in Tasmania?
Yes, to simply answer your question. Yeah. Something that we've been advocating for at Friends of the Earth is for an increase in the capacity to fight fires. So once again, that's going back to resourcing. And yeah, we do need to be thinking about our watershed and our catchments and how we're protecting those places to stay wetter for longer. You know, they say that we're in this period of the wet gets wetter and the dry gets drier with climate change. So, you know, we're having these more intense rainfall events. And in these rainfall events, we actually are losing a lot of water because we're not capturing it because the water's hitting surfaces so fast and running off so fast into drains or causing erosion or whatever. So we're not actually capturing that water. And then, you know, with the dry seasons, right now it hasn't rained for over 2 months where I live, and I'm praying that it rains this Sunday. But yeah, my tanks are getting low and the community's tanks are getting low, and we just haven't adapted for these periods of drier seasons yet and reconsidered how we're managing our water storage.
Great answer, and thanks for that. Thanks for answering that one that I hadn't given you any warning about.
That's okay.
So, Alana, good on you. And I know you've got something else important to do now. Have you got a message for the listeners about conserving and caring for the land?
I feel like conserving and caring for the land is just my human nature, and I think it exists within everybody. And I encourage people to awaken that part of themselves and connect back into the land, because that connects you back to your humanness. And I think you just live a more enriched life connected to the world around you, and you also meet really wonderful people. So get out there and find an opportunity to connect with, because yeah, I think it's a way of life that is really organic and just rooted in our human nature.
Alana Mountain, I love your work. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you so much. And yeah, happy International Women's Day.
Yeah. Good on you.
You're on 3CR. This is part of our 24-hour broadcast for International Women's Day. This segment is celebrating women in conservation. Stay tuned.
So I'd like to kick things off by also extending my respect to all First Nations people in this room this morning. And I'd also like to thank everyone for joining us as I introduce to you Dr. Mandy Nicholson. Mandy is a Wurundjeri, Dja Dja Wurrung, and Nuri Ilamurung, as well as German woman, who has kindly joined us this morning to welcome us to country. Thank you.
Burundap, Yirambaring, Kiripik, Kiripalok, Nugalik. Wundanai. Bikut, Bikdui, Banyabik, Murnwutbik, Wuruwurubik, Ba Darangokbik, Ba Bunjalal, Willamu, Mundanai, Lalal, Ba Gugung Nugalik, Ba Nuguldan, Ba Liwikbalok Nugalik, Ba Nuguldan. My name's Mandy Nicholson. It's way too early for me, but I thought what a great cause and what a great event this is. And I extend my arms to all of you women in this room that are powerful leaders in your own communities, in your household, in your work, and in the struggle to bring country back. And what I mean by bringing country back, as we all know, we walk around the city, we see the creeks and the rivers poisoned, rubbish, overflow, everything. It makes you very sad that country and our waterways aren't healthy. And I just think about country and how we can all together work together to make country as best as it can be in today's world. And as a traditional custodian, there's three obligations that I have towards you and there's three obligations that you have to give back to me. And they're simple obligations, but they're very powerful. So taking care of self, that's easy to do. Taking care of others, that's easy to do. And taking care of country sounds easy, but as you all know in this room, it's not easy. We can go and walk around and clean a bit of rubbish out of the waterways or plant some plants, and that's a start, but it's a whole world effort that we need to put our hands together and our minds together to actually create change. And when I think about country and when I welcome people to country, it isn't about, hey, you're welcome, you know, have a great day. It's about understanding how First Nations people see country and how we connect to country, both on a physical level but also a spiritual level. I've always thought, you know, being on country, being raised on country, being born on country, it connected me much more powerfully than if I was off country. But then I think about that, and I studied it at uni. I did a PhD on this topic. Country isn't something that you physically have to be on to have country within you. It's within your murup or your spirit. You can be off country, you can be born off country, your parents can be born off country, but you still have country within you. So it's a spiritual thing. So the balance between the physical and spiritual is the physical level. We can walk on the ground, we can dig into the earth, we can breathe the air, we can look at the sky, we can see the stars at night. But the essential elements of country that entwine all of those layers are how we can connect spiritually. There are small physical ways that we can connect to country. For example, we can get a gum leaf and look at it differently than we've ever looked at it before. We look at the green colour, we look at the main vein down the middle of the leaf, then we look at the veins that branch off that. But then look deeper than that. Look at the smaller veins. Even get like a magnifying glass out. You'll see so many beautiful veins on that leaf. And then when the leaf dies, it doesn't die in my eyes, but it gets regenerated into the earth. It loses all of that green. It loses not the structure of the leaf, but the veins the tiny little veins are still there, like a skeleton of that gum leaf. And I think about that gum leaf curled up. It's been young, it's been growing. It's curled up now, it's ready to go back into the ground. But no matter what stage of life that leaf is, you can still crush it and smell that eucalyptus oil in that leaf. So you're using your senses to connect to country. We're also in the middle of the city, we can tune out of everything that's going on around us. And I drove in this morning and saw all these beautiful balloons. I thought, oh, I've got to do that because there's no sound except for the, you know, the horrendous sound of the fire. But in the silent moments, you're floating above the city. You're floating above country. And you're looking at country from a different perspective. So you're tuning out of everything else and you're enjoying that moment. Take your shoes off. Walk in the grass. Close your eyes. Tune out of the city noise, the swearing, the car horns, all of that, and the bustleness, if that's a word, in the city, and tune in to other sounds that you don't usually listen out for in the city, and they're the birds. You'll hear Dun Dun, the rainbow lorikeet. You'll hear Wah, the raven. You'll hear, there's Gamayil this morning. They got a really unusual sound. What do you call it in English? Can't remember. That's great that I can't remember in English. The Kerala. And you start to think of things from a different perspective. You look at things differently. So the three things were taking care of self, others and country. Tuning into nature like that is one way to do that. So when I talk about layers of country, you've got below country, bikut. That's where we, as you all know, the ground is that life-giving layer with all the bugs and grubs and the roots of the trees and everything in there. So that's that first and initial layer of country. Then it's connected to the layer above that, which is on country. So on country is where we gather, do our ceremonies, balance out our life that we're busy working, being parents, being grandparents, whatever we do, we need to make sure our spiritual self remains up there as well. We can't sort of get too busy in our work, except what you guys are doing, because it's amazing. And then above that, we've got Banyabik, which is water country that, as I was mentioning, it's not healthy anymore, but we used to gift water from country to say, hey, everything's safe while you're here. Hopefully one day we can do that again. I heard that they want to make a swimming area in the Birrarung. good luck with that. I really mean that seriously. Because of because no one's taking care of country with those three points that I mentioned. So once that starts happening, everyone can swim in that river and not get sick. Then above that, we've got Murrumbik, which is wind country, that blows the smoke from our welcoming fires and carries our ngulu, or our voice, up to Bunjil. And then above that, we've got Wudawudawbik, the physical layer, of where we see the physical form of our creation being, so they're usually the flying creatures. And then above that, even at night time, you've got the other part of the sky that we don't see during the day, is Darangolbik. So you really love the name that we use for star country. Darang means tree, golk is stick, and bik is country. So it really sort of wraps up why we're all here today, looking at layers of country differently, looking at the stars and understanding that what we see as First Nations people up in the stars is actually reflected down here on Earth, and how we can all work together in all of those beautiful layers of country to make this world a better place. So I just wanted to say huge congratulations to all of you people in this room, mainly women, and the men that are supporting to create change, because if anything's going to make change, it's women. So thank you.
You're listening to 3CR, our 24-hour broadcast for International Women's Day. Next up, you're going to hear a song called Our Logarithm by Combat Wombat. Content warning for swearing.
Corporations, you greenies think you can slow me down. Stop mucking around with my machine. It's a lean and mean forest fucker if ever I seen. So get out of me way. Gotta earn me pay. Get a job. Shoot a feral. Bulldozer greenie today.
Now I'm the king of the swingers. Ooh, the jungle VIP. Swingers, ooh, the jungle VIP. Now I'm the king of the swingers, ooh, the jungle VIP. Now I'm the king of the swingers, ooh, the jungle VIP. Now I'm the king of the swingers, ooh, the jungle VIP. Now I'm the king of the swingers, ooh, the jungle VIP.
Well, man, what a beat.
You're on 3CR, that was Our Logarithm by Combat Wombat. You're listening to our 24-hour broadcast for International Women's Day. We're continuing to hear women's voices from the Celebrating Women in Conservation Breakfast 2025.
I would like to introduce to you the Parliamentary Secretary for Climate Action and Yorta Yorta woman and superstar, Sheena Watt.
I'll start with thanking Mandy Nicholson. Thank you for welcoming us here this morning. Thank you for starting our day with culture, with deepening our understanding of country and all that we must do for it. Any morning where I wake up and the first people I see and the first conversations I have are about country and protecting country, well, I know they're going to be a good day. So thank you for starting all of our mornings like that today. I'm so very grateful. Thank you also for your studies into living off country. And as an Aboriginal woman who was born off country and has never lived on country her whole life, in fact, I think I count the amount of times I've spent on country in hours, not days. It's hours, and for me that's never enough. And but to have you speak so clearly about how you can live off country, be born off country, but still so connected, matters a great deal. So thank you for your research, and I hope that it changes minds and understanding about what it is to be an Aboriginal person living in the big smoke. I'm so grateful to you. Thank you so very much. Yeah, I thought about it, and I've got to tell you that marching forward is one thing, but it also requires decisive steps and decisive action. We need to convince ourselves and others that there is more work to be done, and we do that through action and continuing our efforts. And for me, it really resonated in relation to conservation efforts. We must march forward together if we're to drive meaningful change in gender equality and in protecting our natural environment. Women and gender diverse people play a crucial role in environment and the conservation sector. We bring a distinct, vital voice to problem solving, which is necessary when it comes to tackling problems as vast as the biodiversity crisis and climate change. I want to take a moment to call out not just the women in the room, which there are so very many of, but also the work that you've done to drive really significant targets and goals around environmental conservation, safeguarding biodiversity and addressing the climate emergency. It cannot be met without your leadership and your involvement and your voice being heard many, many times. And I'm so delighted to hear that the number of NANAP rangers is now so full of incredible women. That fills me up. And I know it's not in the script, but you know, when you're having that like a crisis in high school and you're trying to work out like what you want to do with the whole rest of your life, and you have to like fill it out in a form on some deadline, like what am I doing? And I will tell you that on that form, when I imagined exactly where I wanted to be and what I wanted to do, I put down with great hope and enthusiasm a ranger course up in Cairns. And I often, when this job gets tough, I think, imagine what my days would be like if I was like a ranger. Yeah. So that's the one that I come back to time and time again. And as I've gone to the graduation of the rangers with Trust for Nature, I reflected on the fact that, look, I failed the chainsaw course, so I probably wasn't going to be that good at it because that was something that I did when I came down here. I thought, yeah, no, I can get back into it, and then I failed chainsaw. So it was never actually ever going to happen. But I do take the moments to reflect. And so to those rangers, I've got to tell you, like, you're all my heroes because you can handle some equipment that is just spectacular. I know and want to highlight your work, the work that's being done around climate change and its fundamental long-term threat to biodiversity. And we know that protecting and restoring biodiversity is a vital part of the solution, and it absorbs carbon and reduces further greenhouse gas emissions. Look, there's so many of you in the room that are working tirelessly, marching forward with nature-based solutions for the climate crisis. And I've got some examples. We've seen them on the video, and they include the 1,700 private landholders who've taken the courageous and generous steps to place a Trust for Nature conservation covenant on their property. To each and every one of you, if you're here, can you just, like, give yourself some love, like, because this is incredible, and give love to each other.
International Women's Day at 3CR includes all self-identified women and gender non-conforming folk. Hear our voices and only our voices. International Women's Day on 3CR Community Radio.
And so, so many of you have made a really brave decision about your banking and your finance decision, and are working with organisations like Bank Australia, who have permanently protected 2,117 hectare conservation reserve in Western Victoria. That's an incredible choice. Thank you. And there is also the permanently protecting of habitat, which prevents carbon from being released into the atmosphere and keeps our air fresh and our waterways clean. Can I just also shout out that the land protected by Trust for Nature through conservation covenants and nature reserves stores approximately 4.2 million tonnes of CO2 annually in Victoria alone. I'm still trying to grapple the enormous numbers in this work, I've got to tell you. But when they give me like what that means, then it makes a lot of sense, which I'm very happy to report is equal to removing more than 4 million cars from our roads per year. And to Bush Heritage, my goodness, your network of reserves across Australia stores approximately 45.7 million tonnes of carbon and annually sequesters more than 306,000 tonnes of carbon per year, equivalent to 66,000 cars off the road. That's pretty awesome. But I've got to tell you, when I heard about the Gereng Noongar country work that you've been doing, that's the one that fills me up. So that is a collaboration with Green Fleet to run a climate-ready restoration trial in Victoria involving seedlings of the same species that have already adapted to the climate, protected for the Nadu Hills in 70 years' time when the trees reach their maturity. And, of course, I'll take a moment to shout out Dr. Dominic Hess. I know you're here. I've seen you. Where are you? Hello. Hi. Thank you for your work. We did a course together a long time ago. We were, oh, hi. Yeah, we did. I like to follow your work and I'm a big fan still. And then I read about this and I'm like, yep, that sounds exactly like something Dr. Dominic could do. So can I also say the Victorian government is taking some really long-term actions to reduce the impact of climate change on the environment. We're a leader and I can read out a whole bunch of statistics and hot facts if you like, or not. I'm seeing the not enthusiasm be like really high here in the morning, and I'm okay with that, that's all right. But I will just say that we are continuing to invest in Trust for Nature to protect some of Victoria's most crucial habitat on private land. So congratulations to Trust for Nature for your Habitat Forever campaign, seeking to scale over the next 5 years through a shared investment of $75 million. Through Habitat Victoria, Habitat Forever, Trust for Nature is seeking to grow the revolving fund program, securing more covenants and protecting more special places, work alongside First Peoples to care for country. Oh, that fills me up, your work with MOB. Oh, it's so good. And supports the 1,700 covenators. Is that how you say it? I don't know. I've just made it up. Already making significant contribution. These are just some of the examples of the work that's progressing to protect our state's environment for many generations to come. There's always, always more work to be done. And I'm just going to, like, big note a bit, because I can. I was meeting some big flash, like, EU types last Friday morning, and we had this conversation about all the things that they're doing over there, and I began with acknowledging country, and they said, oh, it's all very different here with your work with Indigenous peoples, and then I dropped some hot facts about how much of our country is owned and managed by First Peoples, and so you can't do all the things that you've laid out in your big, bold vision here in this country unless you are working with First Peoples each and every day. And that's why I was so excited to see and hear and talk about to these, like, big shot ambassadors and that about all the work that we're doing with First Peoples, because they had not a clue. And so we are doing it different. We are doing it in a uniquely Australian way, and we are remembering that this land always was and always will be Aboriginal land, and we are just the current generation looking after it. So thank you so very, very much, and let's continue to celebrate and learn from all the voices, especially the fabulous women voices, Go Sisters, and draw upon those perspectives as we continue our conservation efforts, marching forward, united, fighting, and what's my new word for the year? Help me out, sister. It's loud, proud, and being heard. Yep, that's right. You heard it here. Okay.
Hi, it's Marion and Hannah, and we're here at 3CR to highlight some of the vital work in land conservation by women. So keep listening.
Without further ado, I'd like to introduce our 2025 keynote speaker, Arabana woman Tegan Shields from Curtin University, who will be speaking today on empowering Aboriginal-led traditional knowledge for biodiversity conservation in Australia.
I too want to start by acknowledging country and our old people who empower us to come here and have these conversations. and also our allies that make space in these places for us to share our thinking. I acknowledge women in conservation from, you know, cane toad hunters or collectors, to our amazing women rangers in the desert who are the most exceptional trackers for cats. There's so many more women involved in this space that aren't in this room, and I do want to acknowledge them. My grandfather was part of the Stolen Generation. He was taken off country when he was 3. He was put into a boys' home, and at 16 he absconded and ended up in the Merchant Navy and travelled up to Newcastle, a Wabakal country, and that's where he stayed. And so Aunty Mandy's talking around being removed from country and not living on country or not spending time on country, but still being connected to country really resonated with me. We very much grew up with culture and a lot of time in the bush. And our grandfather taught us how to feel country in every sense of the word. You know, we'd go through the bush and he would say, oh, touch that tree, and you would touch it. And he would say, how does it feel? And if it was cold or wet, he'd say, leave it there, it's still growing. If it was dry and warm, he'd say, take it, we're going to have a big campfire, let's bring it with us. And so that real deep connection with country has been ingrained in me from a very young age. Was always very much one for you and two for the bush. So, you know, off I went to Lismore to do applied science, and I really loved it. But this same message kept coming out to me, and it was, you know, you're a woman, you're probably not going to get a job. You know, we'd have physics teachers say, oh, you're the exception to the rule, you can read a map. And I became a high school science teacher for a while. So I never actually made it out in the field to be a ranger. And talking to him on the side about integration of Indigenous knowledge and how could we do that better, you know. And at that time, it just wasn't taught at uni, you know, this idea of valuing Indigenous knowledge for conservation. They were secret little conversations off to the side. And even then, when I first finished my undergrad, I really wanted to go and do research in that space. And I actually applied to do a PhD 3 times and was never successful because of the topic. You know, it wasn't accepted in that mainstream way. And that was kind of where this journey started for me. You know, I was 19, we were doing a cultural revival project where we were making a possum skin cloak. And one of the aunties said to me, you've gone to university, you're doing science, you need to do an ethics statement about how we're making this cloak. And then it occurred to me, how strange, you know, we're told to embrace our culture when it seemed to be this nice kind of art process, but not our whole culture. Imagine what it would be like if we had our men out there gathering those possums and skinning them and actually reclaiming all of that culture. And why is it that our legislation and policy settings, you know, kind of prevent that? And so, you know, that really set me on this journey about how do we actually champion Indigenous way of knowing and being and enact that into legislation and policy. I think the other issue is that, you know, the general public person wouldn't know what an Indigenous protected area is or an IPA. And so we've got a role to raise awareness about that and the value that they play. These programs are not just about protecting biodiversity, they're about empowering communities, creating jobs, revitalising cultural practice, and also healing. You know, supporting Indigenous-led solutions, genuine collaboration of knowledge systems, and Indigenous decision-making. And for me, part of that is actually stepping back and handing over the power and saying, you guys can make the decisions. We're comfortable with that. Second one is recognising culturally significant entities. And when I talk about culturally significant entities, I mean species, plants and animals, and ecological communities that are really important to Indigenous communities. Not for predetermined values like threatened species or migratory species, but because it is part of their knowledge system and that they need to understand what's happening. And so actually working with communities to say, hey, what are your culturally significant entities? And more importantly, how do you want to manage them? And really integrating that into your planning mechanisms. I think often we get stuck in this idea of Western boundaries, you know, LGAs, national parks, whatever they may be. And I really think we need to step out of that. And we need to think about our landscape, our land and seascapes as a continued connected system. And why is it that we feel like we only need to work within our boundaries? I think about restoration projects. You know, my time at Wadjimup at Rottnest Island, I did a lot of restoration projects.
you know, we'd come back and we'd be like, yes, we planted 1,000 trees today and we had 30 volunteers and, you know, it was this big celebration. You know what? We never went back to that site to check it out, except for when they were doing environmental monitoring. But when I went out with Mob, I went for a week with all of community. We shared stories, we exchanged knowledge, we sat in country. We might have only planted 30 trees. But you know what? 10 years ago, that happened. And I still get a photo of that tree every year. I know what's happening to that tree. I'm connected to it. That is a different way of knowing and being. I see that as a transformational approach to restoration and conservation, not a transactional one. It's not about measured outcomes. And so how do we actually think about conservation in a different lens and invest more into that whole system? Number 5, joined up funding and mutual benefits. It occurs to me that we are in a really restricted funding envelope, and sometimes we compete with each other instead of working together. When do we actually think about working together for these grants as a collective instead of submitting multiple grants and hoping yours wins? Why don't we work together and say, hey, let's do this in our collective network? When are we going to start talking to people like health and education and saying, hey, you know what? Conservation's much more than environmental outcomes. It's well-being outcomes, it's cultural outcomes, and it can even be economic outcomes. When do we join up those services and funding buckets, and how does that work? Number 6, now, Chairman over here asked me if I was going to say anything controversial. These next two might be a little bit controversial. I'm not sure how it will be received. But I often think about how do we compensate traditional owners when they decide to step back from cultural practice for the betterment of conservation? Why is it that when a fisherman hands in his license, we give him a huge compensation and say, thank you, thanks so much for doing that for environment. But when it comes to Mob, we're just expected to do it. When do we actually hand over and say, hey, you've got this now, you can go into soil management? You know, even if I think about Uluru, the national park, it was 34 years before they actually stopped people climbing on the rock from when traditional owners first asked them to stop. Is that joint management? How do we move from that then into soil management? For me, I think we really do need to move towards a biocultural lens, objectives and indicators. So we're not just measuring environmental outcomes. We're starting to think about social, economic, well-being, cultural, and they should be place-based. My last one is about building a pipeline of talent. In the last fortnight, I've seen so many amazing positions come out for Indigenous engagement or knowledge brokers within the ENGO sector. Even for me, who's connected into community, I'm like, oh, who would I send that job to? We need to make space for young ones coming through. And then once we're finished in those middle management positions, we need some leadership positions as well. And so as a sector, we need to think about that pipeline and that journey from ranger to middle management to leadership. And we need to be able to think about how can we actually facilitate that where Mob can stay on country. Because otherwise, we're not going to have the talent to pull through the system. I truly believe that by working together and listening to each other and embracing the wisdom of Indigenous knowledge, that we can create a world where our children will thrive, where we will be happy to say we've left them in a better place. So let's work together to care for country, not just for ourselves, but for our future generations who come after us. Thank you.
That was Tegan Shields at the Celebrating Women in Conservation Breakfast 2025. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope that everyone has a beautiful celebratory International Women's Day.
Stay tuned for the next 16 hours for our 24-hour broadcast celebrating International Women's Day.
You're listening to International Women's Day on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM and 3CR Digital.